is your Polycast for Tuesday, May 23rd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a special session to finish the budget and a look at some of the items that passed in the closing hours of the regular session. Minnesota lawmakers spilled straight into special session early this morning after failing to complete a new budget during their nearly 5 months in St. Paul. Governor Mark Dayton agreed to let them keep working after reaching a tentative deal with Republican legislative leaders. Now they have less than a day to get the job done. Brian Baxt has more.
State lawmakers adjourned their 2017 session, as required, with time to spare last night. But with several big items left on their to-do list, they didn't get to head for the exit.
Stick around till 12:01.
Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka was talking about the start of the next session, just minutes later. It was the same quick turn scene in the House.
The House will come to order.
A special session became necessary because negotiations between the Republican House and Senate and the DFL governor didn't reach a deal to finish the new $46 billion two-year budget on time. It's the fourth special session since 2010 called over tardy budget bills. Things were looking especially bleak for any imminent resolution until about 11:15. That was when Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith emerged from the governor's office with two top Democrats and two top Republicans from the legislature. Gazelka helped spread the news.
Just a few minutes ago, we reached across the table from each other and shook hands. It's how politics should work in Minnesota. It worked extremely well. It wasn't easy. I think we all knew we had to give up something, which is always what happens, and then you get something. But in the end, when that happens, Minnesota wins.
Dayton echoed the assessment.
Obviously, we have very real differences, and so there's been a lot of give and take and people giving up what they want and accepting what they don't want. But you've negotiated in good faith, you and your staffs and other leaders, and appreciate that, and I would agree. We've got the framework. We still have some details to work out.
That framework looks like this. There will be a tax cut of about $660 million, but who gets what is still to be announced. Education will be in line for a funding bump of nearly $500 million. About $50 million of that will be for a preschool program, although not exactly what Dayton had in mind.
It'll accomplish what I want to see in terms of another pre-K opportunity for parents and their children, and with the additional targeting.
And an infusion of money for transportation projects, without any gas tax or vehicle registration increases. Instead, it relies on existing tax dollars and does have $70 million to operate bus transit lines. There will be a borrowing bill for general construction projects that is just shy of $1 billion. There are still important details to work out, which could produce some snags. House Speaker Kurt Dowd was asked about the chances of the deal unraveling.
You know, potentially. But I'll tell you, I don't think it's likely.
The plan is to work through today and up until 7 a.m. tomorrow to assemble the remaining budget bills and pass them. Some veteran lawmakers predict that the timing was ambitious and thought the special session might stretch on a bit longer. They said the unsettled points, including how to shape massive budgets for health programs, were sure to produce disputes that will be up to the top leaders to referee on the fly. DFL Senate Minority Leader Tom Bach says he expects a stop-and-start run to the end. But he said there won't be any procedural roadblocks thrown up.
Well, it would have been better to be done on time, but I'm certainly pleased that we at least have reached an agreement and are really just kind of waiting for the paperwork to catch up.
The deal allows the Republican legislature to pass a measure to prevent cities from enacting their own sick leave and minimum wage requirements for businesses. But Dayton promised to veto that bill. He says he's glad they're keeping it separate from the must-pass budget bills. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
A controversial proposal to increase penalties for protesters who block freeways and trains is dead for this year at the Capitol. Tim Nelson has more.
Republican Nick Zerwas of Elk River introduced the measure in the House earlier this year in response to protests following police shootings in the last 2 years. One following the shooting of Philando Castile, authorities called a riot. Zerwas said the provision was dropped in exchange for another that would block the state from taking steps to give unauthorized immigrants driver's licenses.
I'm very frustrated with that turn of events and the bill not being included and getting done this year. but I remain committed to working to protect the rights of motorists on the freeway.
Zerwas said that he intended to bring the measure up again next year and hope to see it passed when the legislature reconvenes in February. His bill would make blocking freeways and light rail lines a gross misdemeanor. Covering politics, I'm Tim Nelson at the Capitol.
Consumer and renewable energy advocates say they hope Governor Dayton will again reject energy provisions contained in one of the budget bills. Elizabeth Dunbar has that.
The Jobs and Energy Omnibus Bill passed by the legislature still puts energy efficiency and renewable energy advocates at odds with GOP legislative leaders. One controversial provision would exempt small municipal and cooperative utilities from the state's Conservation Improvement Program. That program allows consumers to get rebates when they change out lights or appliances for more efficient ones. Creighton Horahan is a small business owner from Lanesboro who has taken advantage of such rebates.
Losing the program seems to be a huge disadvantage, and I don't understand why there's that disparity between the big and small towns.
It isn't yet clear whether the small utilities will continue offering the rebates if they're not required to do so. Dayton has not indicated whether he'll sign the bill. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
It looks like a law designed to keep farm pollutants out of lakes and streams won't undergo major changes. A bill passed over the weekend keeps this year's deadline for implementation of the governor's buffer zone bill, but allows flexibilities for some farmers. Governor Dayton has championed the law and hasn't said whether he'll sign the new bill. Dan Gunderson has more.
Governor Dayton promised to veto any major changes to the state's buffer law, which requires 50-foot strips of permanent vegetation on farmland along lakes and streams. The strips filter pollutants and prevent erosion. The law is set to take effect this November for public water and a year later for ditches, but some lawmakers wanted to delay implementation for at least a year. The legislation sent to the governor keeps the current deadlines, but allows landowners to seek a waiver to extend the deadline from November to July of next year. Representative Dan Fabian chairs the House Environment and Natural Resources Committee. He says the waiver is a win for farmers.
In effect, we've accomplished what we want to, probably not in the wording, but the net effect is that we have to give those people a little more time to get on board.
John Jasky heads the State Board of Water and Soil Resources and helped negotiate the compromise. He says a delay from November to July is reasonable.
Of course, Minnesota has a winter, so it wouldn't be much happening then anyway. So we think that's actually a pretty practical adjustment to the law.
The bill sent to the governor removed a provision requiring 100% state or federal funding to compensate landowners for buffers, and a provision that would have removed thousands of miles of streams from buffer requirements. An official with the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council says the 8-month waiver will be helpful, but compensation for farmers who plant buffers is still a concern. Environmental groups aren't quite ready to call the revised buffer legislation a win. The legislature shifted funds from clean water projects to pay for local governments to implement buffer legislation. Steve Morse heads the Minnesota Environmental Partnership.
I commend the governor for standing firm on buffers. We do wish he would have stood his ground more on other issues as well, particularly on the legacy amendment and the rate of the clean water funds.
A spokesman for the governor says he will wait until the legislature finishes all budget bills before deciding if he will sign the Environment and Natural Resources bill that contains the buffer language. Covering the environment, Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.